in the distance? Hi, would you consider coming a little bit more down front? We won't hold it against you if you need to leave at some point during the presentation, but it's awfully hard to see you back there. And if you had a question, we'd have to send a carrier pigeon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So thanks for coming. This is a session on the HathiTrust Research Center. We don't have a convener. We're self-convening. My name is John Unsworth. I'm at Brandeis University, and to my left is Robert McNamara. I'm sorry, McDonald. I gave him a whole different history there for a minute. An alternate life flashed before his eyes. Robert McDonald from Indiana and Beth Sandor from that place, University of Illinois. Beth's actually going to start us off, so I'll just invite her up. Thanks.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for coming out today to talk with us about the HathiTrust Research Center. We would like to give you a little bit of background on the center, and we'd really like to have some time to talk with you and hear some of your questions about HathiTrust and the HathiTrust Research Center and how it can support the research that researchers in your institutions may be interested in and that you may be interested in. I'm just going to flash some quick information here that also our virtual audience can pick up as well. First, I want to mention that the HathiTrust is a partnership of academic and research libraries, and they are seeking to work together in collective ways to meet collective challenges that are faced by libraries. These challenges are in sustaining our collections, both digital and in print, increasing their discovery and use, and making them as accessible as possible to a broad constituency. There are now 70 partners in the HathiTrust. Virginia Tech and Kansas State are not yet announced, but coming on shortly, and including many of the largest research institutions in the U.S., two institutions in Canada, and one in Spain. The mission of the HathiTrust is to contribute to the common good by collecting, organizing, preserving, communicating, and sharing the record of human knowledge. The scope of this mission is broad. You'll notice that there is no mention in particular of print materials versus digital or even born digital materials. This is intentional. The vision of the founding partners was nothing less than to ensure long-term preservation and access to the cultural record writ large. So it really wasn't about building a huge database of digitized books. It was much broader than that. The HathiTrust repository offers a number of services, and these are wide in variety. This includes long-term preservation of materials, both at the bit level and of migration of those materials, bibliographic search over the full text of the entire corpus and over the bibliographic records, or the equivalent of the online catalog of the corpus, reading and download capabilities for public domain and open access materials, print on demand for a growing body of public domain and open access volumes, the ability to assemble volumes into virtual collections, which can be searched independently of the larger corpus, distribution of data sets of public domain and open access materials, and access to copyrighted material for the print disabled. As of last week, we also now expect to provide computational access to the copyrighted material through the HathiTrust Research Center. I'll just show you a few wow numbers. The corpus of the Hathi Trust has over 10.8 million volumes. That's as of today. These numbers change frequently. That represents 5.6 million book titles, over 280,000 serial titles, and lots of pages, over 485 terabytes. I guess if you strung the books end to end, you'd have 128 miles. They weigh a lot. And it represents the volumes in the public domain, of which there are 3.4 million, represent roughly 30% of the total capacity in the Hathi Trust right now. In terms of discovery and use of Hathi Trust, the goal of the Hathi Trust has been to facilitate computational research across the full text corpus from its beginning. At this point, we envisioned a three-pronged approach: distributing data sets from the repository for researchers to use on their own machines, a protocol-based approach that would allow researchers to run queries across the corpus and receive results, and finally, a fully-fledged research center with tools and capabilities to allow computation on the corpus, enable collaboration, and simultaneously facilitate curation, enhancement, and reuse of the data. That third option is what the Hathi Trust Research Center is here for. So just placing that into context, some of the initial discussions of computational access to the Hathi Trust were initiated by John Wilkin, who is now the dean at the University of Illinois Library, and was instrumental in starting up the Hathi Trust at the University of Michigan. John Unsworth, who was then dean of the University of Illinois' Graduate School of Library and Information Science, and Tom Dunning, who was the director of the National Center for Supercomputing Applications. That was way back in time in November of 2008. When Michigan, Illinois, and Indiana began discussing the possibility of a research center, these discussions really centered around the Google settlement in 2008. And the real crux of that was the research center needed to enable non-consumptive research, or research where the researchers weren't actually getting into the corpus and pulling out the content in the Hathi Trust corpus. So the goals for the Hathi Trust Research Center are based on a requirement study that John Unsworth carried out along with Carol Palmer at the Graduate School of Library and Information Science in Illinois. In that study, we learned from the experience of 22 scholars who had pioneered full-text data mining research with the first Google Digital Humanities grants. So the governance of the Hathi Trust has a 12-member board of governors. Six of these members are elected from the partnership, and six are appointed by the founding members. This board is charged with conducting the financial oversight of the partnership and developing strategies, setting priorities, and creating working groups and committees to carry on the work of the partnering institutions. And I'm just going to move through this visual so you get a sense of where the Hathi Trust Research Center actually comes in to this schema. Hathi Trust Research Center is actually a part of Hathi Trust writ large, but the University of Indiana and Illinois actually work with the University of Michigan and the Hathi Trust corpus to provide research access to the public domain materials, and we are just beginning to negotiate the process of providing computational research access to the in copyright materials. In terms of governance of the Hathi Trust Research Center, there is an executive committee. Robert, John, and I, and our colleagues Stephen Downey at the Graduate School of Library and Information Science at the University of Illinois, and Beth Playley, at Indiana University are members of the executive group. But we also have an advisory board that is comprised of researchers across a number of disciplines. It is international in scope and strategic in nature. And now I'm going to pass the baton on to my colleague Robert, who's going to continue.
Thank you, Beth. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a component of three parts of the challenges around computational access and mining for the HathiTrust. And you know, so far we've been working, like Beth said, with the public domain corpus, but we're on the march toward enabling access to the full corpus. And these are some of the issues that we had to tackle, especially in the early days of what we're doing with our secure architecture and what we're doing just in terms of access to the material. So I'm going to provide a little bit of an overview of the data, a little bit about the access currently for the data in our current prototype model, which was about a year in the making. We had some early runs at that about a year ago, and then we went toward moving that into more of a productionized type environment. I won't say it's quite a full productionized type environment because I work with a lot of production systems in my other role with the libraries at IU, but we're getting closer and closer to that for researchers that want to go after analysis of the whole corpus. So this is my component about the data overview. And, you know, if we look at that and look at what's been done, you know, even back to the 90s with the Making of America project at the University of Michigan at Cornell, and if we look at things that were some of the first mass-scale digitization pieces like Brewster Kahle's Internet Archive, we see that once we start amassing large-scale digital content like that, we want to go after it and use it in different ways than the one-to-one model that we've learned and know and love from libraries with typical types of media that we have like books. So the big piece was in how we could apply computational analysis to the content once we aggregated it. And that was one of the key goals that we had when we first started the planning process for both writing the RFI so that someone could answer it to build a research center for the HathiTrust, and then when we partnered with Illinois to answer that RFI to say how we would support that as a research center. And if we take a look at the data specifically, we see the types of files that we have. A big part of this is the tab-delimited inventory types of files that are aggregated monthly, and of course we sync with that currently with the live copy that's there from the HathiTrust with the HathiTrust Research Center. And when we look at that piece of it, we kind of have two tracks. We have the bibliographic content track that tells us a lot about the file and whether it can be used in certain ways because of the copyright issues. And the third piece that I'm going to talk about after data overview, data access, is a little bit to do with how copyright, especially U.S. copyright, affects some of what we're doing right now. But the big piece there is the identifier is the limited bibliographic information. When we first started the project with Google Books, I don't think anyone realized how important the bibliographic information would be, and some of that was just okay to begin with, and then some of it was, you know, kind of gradually left out over time. We're looking at enriching that. In fact, we have a grant right now to do some R&D around metadata enrichment that will be coming out soon for calls because it's kind of a challenge type of grant. And then we have the whole piece around the rights, the language, the GovDoc status. And if we take a look here at the next slide, this shows you kind of the content, current content distribution for the full HathiTrust corpus itself. Not, you know, this is the full thing, the 10 million volumes digitized. About 30% of these are in the public domain. But that's shifting because it's, you know, as we move forward in time, that shifts a bit as to what's available. 19% of the works are public domain worldwide, including about 430,000 or about 4% that are U.S. federal government documents. 10% of the works are in the public domain when viewed from the United States, and then they're in other types of copyright components once they're viewed outside the United States. So if you keep that in mind as we move forward, and I talk a little bit more about how this affects copyright, I think it'll make a little more sense to you. The content sources there, as you see, once we slice that down, all the content in the HathiTrust is really contributed by current partnering institutions, mainly through their digitization work, but a lot of it was from the Google Books project where the libraries actually sent the content to Google and it was digitized. And that was done at first, you know, where they were looking at it as, well, we'll just digitize all of the University of Michigan's library, and this will be a prototypical amount of content for any large research library. Well, then you started having the other partners coming into play who wanted to contribute content, and what they started seeing from a typical, you know, component of libraries was that they really needed a collection development plan for how they were going to pull that in and really build out the corpus, or else it was going to be a little more random for them. So what they were able to do is work with the partner libraries to analyze the bibliographic data, which they didn't think would be that important at first, right? To figure out who had, you know, which copy of what book and where it was going to reside, and who could do the fastest turnaround time on getting those books shipped to them, because some of the libraries involved with this had real issues in terms of, how do you get access to the library, how do you get access to the shipping dock, and so forth. But if you take a look at this breakdown from the contributed institutions, you see there, of course, the University of Michigan Library and the University of California libraries in aggregate have the most content. But even when you get down to a group like Indiana University, which is there, you know, at 2%, you're still talking about 200,000 or 300,000 volumes. And for, you know, several years, we did two shipments a month out of Indiana to the digitization component, and that was a pretty interesting feat of logistics for what we did there. But I'm not talking about that today. So if we take also a look, at the spectrum of dates, this is really the thing that interests most of the scholars that we've talked to so far about using our cyber infrastructure to analyze the content. It spans from the 15th century all the way to the present. That really hasn't been available to scholars previously. Before, you were either looking at specific sets of content that had been digitized or marked up in certain ways because people knew they wanted to analyze them and look at them in different ways than from their original media, which oftentimes was, you know, pretty valuable, and you didn't want to just be pulling out all the time. So you digitized it, and then you were able to do certain things with it that made it easier to analyze. If we also take a look at the language distribution, it's typically what you'd expect to see in a large North American research library, where the bulk of it, of course, there's in English, but you see the breakdown of all the different languages. And that's another area of interest from some of the scholars we've been talking to, is taking a look at that breakdown, taking a look at the things that may be hidden from that, you know, language barrier, the translation component, as they go to analyze that. And next, I want to talk a little bit about the data availability. And like I said, we kind of have two channels there. We have the bibliographic data, which we can do different things with, and we've actually set that up in a way to what I call kind of building collections in aggregate. There are different tools in the current production HathiTrust right now that'll let you go and build personal collections of content that you find, so that, you know, you've got that in your personalized list and you can see. But what we're doing there with the bibliographic content in the Research Center, by contrast, is enabling people to build these data sets that then they can subset, so they can go analyze just that content on that material. So you're not just building a list there, you're building a collection that can be analyzed by the infrastructure that we have in place. And so you ask, how is that available? Well, we have basically two APIs right now. We've got the data API and the BIB API. And the BIB API is really what we're using with our Blacklight instance there to aggregate into these sets that can then be submitted back in for computational jobs to be run on them by various algorithms. We have both the HathiFiles, the OAI, the data sets, and pretty soon, because of our project that's been funded by the Sloan Foundation, we're going to be able to offer a virtual machine setup that would allow researchers to come in a virtual machine where basically they can pull their data sets in, but they're in a virtual machine where they can't take anything back out. And that's the whole point of how we want to enable this analysis, is so that you can use the corpus, but you can't abuse the corpus from terms of a copyright standpoint. So a little bit about copyright. The big piece here is that we're strongly bound to both U.S. copyright issues with this, but we're also bound around who actually digitized the content. So if you have content that was digitized by a library, there's a different risk factor involved than content that was digitized by Google as part of the Google Book project. And then we also have other pieces to that where we've been looking at works that are kind of in the gray area of copyright and trying to document the fact that, you know, they have been completely orphaned. No one else is looking for monetary components out of the content. And that's a whole other project that has been funded by IMLS through a lot of the partner libraries around HathiTrust to work on that. So the rights determination comes from the work that I talked about, basically with the various components of things we know both from the BIB record and also from other things that we know in that inventory piece. And this is conducted in all the works at the time of ingest when the records are modified. And as you see there, we have the public domain worldwide, which is the works published before 1923, as well as the U.S. federal government document publications, and then the nine U.S. works published prior to 1872, and then the public domain of the United States, the nine U.S. works published prior to 1923. We also have, like I mentioned, the IMLS-funded project called CRMS, which has the manual rights determination, and they've already cleared a good many works that they've gone through to look at specifically that are kind of on the edge of where they are with copyright, and manually documented the fact that, you know, they're either completely orphaned or not, and then they make them available on that, and that's one of the big things that makes a change in terms of what's publicly available versus the stuff that's still in copyright that's synced every month with HathiTrust. And as you see there, they have a double-blind review process and so forth to do that. Here's just a little bit of an idea about the rights attributes that they have parsed out by a specific ID going into HathiTrust, and as you can see, it's quite extensive. I'm not going to go through it. But basically, you start getting into these instances of what's available, what's not available, what's available in the U.S., what's not available outside the U.S., what's available for someone who is a member of HathiTrust Digital Library and actually contributed content, and what's not available possibly because of who scanned it and so forth. And then you've got the rights determination codes, and these are some of the things that we would like to automate so that over time, the more we know about the actual volumes digitally held in HathiTrust, we're able to determine the use factor for them just in a big automation way with computation rather than having to manually take a look at it. And then you'll see here just another type of breakdown that, you know, for instance there, if we walk through that first line, the type of work, it's public domain worldwide. So of course it's searchable worldwide, it's viewable worldwide. The full PDF download, the partners only if scanned by Google, but if not scanned by Google, then it's also available worldwide. And then print on demand worldwide, print disabilities, the partners can do it, and then it's worldwide. And then we've got a preservation component that's there. So as you can see, it gets pretty complicated, but by parsing those out by the type of work, we hope to have machine methods to actually work on that. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, John Unsworth, who's going to talk a bit more about the research paradigm that's in place right now for the HathiTrust Research Center. Thank you.
Thanks, Robert. So having just looked at those long tables of copyright attributes, I can tell you that's the last thing that a researcher wants to navigate. And they want it all, or they want all of the stuff that's interesting to them, and they don't want to worry about any of that. And so that's part of the purpose, too, of the Research Center, is to simplify that. I'm going to show you some ways that we do it. One important principle in the HathiTrust is to bring the computation to the data. Whether that means having all the data and the computing power in one place, or whether it means packaging up a subset and shipping it on a virtual machine with the algorithms that are going to be used to compute on it, having the data and the computation in one place is a key architectural principle of the Research Center. The architecture of the Research Center we've seen in the boxes and arrows before. Web services, a registry of services, and algorithms is also part of the architecture, so that as people contribute new tools, other people will be able to find them. We have solar full text indexes and NoSQL data store. Here we're sort of mimicking things that are done in the HathiTrust. We use OpenID for authentication, and we have a portal as a front end for programmatic access for what I would describe as more pre-canned analytical routines for more general audiences. There's also something called the Software Environment for the Advancement of Scholarly Research, or CSER, which so far has been a core piece of the data mining infrastructure for the HathiTrust Research Center. But the point of the center is to collect tools and algorithms from all over and to make them usable across the entire corpus, including ultimately that 70% that is in some kind of copyright somewhere. This is, we're going to have a couple slides here on complexity and the hiding of complexity. The HTRC data API on the right, which is that little strip there to the left of what says DPLA, That's one sort of complexity hiding interface. And there's another one up here underneath what says portal blacklight, that line up top. There's a value in hiding complexity from other systems, which is what the one on the right does. There's a value in hiding complexity from users, which is the one at the top. But in each case, there's going to be a moment of validation or verification where you need to be able to see what's going on inside the black box, either to establish provenance of data, if you're one of those people on the right, or to assess whether security is intact, probably also there, or simply to know whether the results that you got back as a researcher are legitimate. On the user side, the HathiTrust Research Center hides the complexity of analytics. So in this sense, it's like Google Search, which is a simple interface that hides the complexity that's necessary to search billions of pages. The kinds of things returned from this HathiTrust Research Center interaction might be the spatial relationship of words in a tag cloud. Their statistical frequency plotted in a spatial plot. Or tabular information of a statistical nature. So these are the sorts of results that we see being returned to researchers in a non-consumptive environment where that's what they get out and that's what they can republish. Shifting the complexity hiding interface to the machine level, we open up that cloud in the previous slide to see what's inside it. We have algorithms drawn from CSER and other analysis tool suites, like Mahout and MapReduce. We have the HathiTrust corpus and subsets of the corpus that users have either personally as part of their work set assembled or that other people have made available as work sets or that are publicly available, and other data sets that are used, maybe not coming from the HathiTrust Research Center or from the HathiTrust at all. HTRC brokers bringing together these pieces so that computation can take place, usually on a resource like Big Red 2 at Indiana, or Exceed at Illinois. These are supercomputing, national level supercomputing resources. There's an arrow you'll see from the compute engine, the big red here, to the complexity hiding interface. And that arrow is there because for a lot of the audiences that we work with, the research audiences, the interaction with text isn't an entirely automated workflow. It requires some level of interaction in the process, tweaking, and it's less a batch mode model than it is a live interface model. Robert mentioned some work done under a Sloan grant in Indiana. This is now in year 2 of 3, and it's going to be a critical piece of the architecture that provides access to copyrighted material, computational access. HTRC is using the results of that Sloan grant as the design spec for that virtual machine, once the security arrangements have been reviewed by Michigan and signed off on by Illinois and Indiana. Work sets are created using a page that looks like this in the Research Center. This is designed to look similar to what you would see if you were assembling a collection in the HathiTrust itself, but this is actually the Research Center's work set builder. And then we take those work sets and put them in conversation with an algorithm which produces computation, which produces results of the sort that we were talking about before. So that's just sort of where the work set builder fits in. And then I want to talk just briefly on what this is all really for, which is research engagements, the core purpose of HathiTrust Research Center to facilitate research. And I don't want to oversell our ability to do this at the present. We're still in beta in all kinds of ways. And we're still finding our way to production services. We've been testing and prototyping using public domain data, but I do expect that we'll have services that look more like what you need and more like what we expect to provide in about a year, at which point we will be providing access to more of the material in the HathiTrust. Even so, and with that caveat, we have a number of research engagements ongoing, and if you are interested, you should talk to us. So here's one, INFO, the Indiana Philosophy Ontology Project, could equally well stand for inferring philosophy ontologies, because what they're doing is using data mining, human inference, and machine learning to infer dynamic ontologies in philosophical literature. The philosophical literature that they're working with in this case consists of about 37 million words of philosophical content from the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, the Internet Encyclopedia of Philosophy, Philosophy Papers, and the HathiTrust Google Books Collection. This is a project generating what they call dynamic ontologies. Here's another example. This is from work being done by Ted Underwood at UIUC, the University of Illinois. Each line here represents a ratio, and the ratio is the ratio of words that entered English before 1150 and the words that entered after 1150 as they appear in each of three different genres. The lines are the genres. So up top, the purple line is poetry, the middle line, green line, is prose fiction, the bottom line is nonfiction. And what you're seeing is a time period that covers from about 1700 to 1900. And what that's showing you is that the ratio, the proportion of words entering the English language before 1150 goes up over time in poetry and goes down over time in nonfiction and goes up a bit in fiction, but not as much. So basically what you would take away from that is that literary texts become more self-conscious, more self-consciously authentic in using words that predate the Norman invasion and French administration of English. And you can find, in fact, poets and novelists writing about that. So here we are able to test what poets say they were doing in the 19th century particularly, and it turns out that they were, which in some sense is a non-result, but it's an empirical non-result, which we couldn't have had before. The point of interest here is clearly use of language in literary texts over time in general terms, and if you're interested in that kind of thing, I recommend Ted's blog, The Stone in the Shell. There's a URL on this slide for that particular experiment, but there's all kinds of stuff in there well worth having a look at. And by way of demonstrating some disciplinary diversity, I'll just say that the last project we're presenting here as an example of research engagement in detail is Professor Rzetsky's research in, he says, gaining an asymptotic understanding of how phenotypes such as human healthy diversity and maladies are implemented at the level of genes and networks of interacting molecules. Well, what does that have to do with text mining, you might ask? And he would answer, to harvest as much information about known molecular interactions as possible, my group runs a large-scale text mining effort aiming at analysis of a vast corpus of biomedical publications. Currently, we can extract from text automatically about 500 distinct flavors of relations among biomedical entities. So computational linguistics, computer science, computer vision, science of all sorts where there's scientific literature and there's feedback from the literature into experimentation or into practice. Because the disciplinary diversity of the collections in a major research library is so diverse, the research purposes and the disciplines that it will support, we expect, will be equally diverse. There's other projects we're engaged with. Some of them have to do with music. Some of them have to do with geography. Some of them have to do with semantics. Some of them have to do with textual genomics. There's all kinds of different angles on this collection. We also do some in-house research. There's a grant that's just started from the Mellon Foundation at Illinois looking at the ontology and the uses of work sets in this connection. What do people mean when they assemble a work set? What else does it include beside the texts that they're working on, like their results or their algorithms or other things? How do they share those things with other people, and so on? We also are interested in using this and other research to enrich the metadata in the HathiTrust itself and in the research center. So there's an in-house research agenda there too. And then I mentioned this Sloan project for secure text mining at scale, funded in Indiana. So in-house research, engagements with external researchers, engagements across the disciplines, not a plug-and-play self-service portal at this point, especially for large and complex projects, but certainly something that we'd be happy to talk to you about. And with these thanks to all the people who've contributed to this presentation and to the project, I'll just leave that last slide up for contact information and particularly call your attention to the fact that if you want to engage at a research level, that last email address is your best. Miao Chen is the HTRC Director for Education and Outreach, and she can help you. So we'd be happy to take questions, and we have about a little more than 5 minutes left. But yeah.
Or electronic format that books have to be submitted in. I saw one reference to PDF, and I was just trying to, you know, figure out whether you've got some standard format that libraries submit their materials in. And then the second question I had is, if you have it in some kind of a, you know, it looked like it was word searchable, do you have any, do the libraries usually do editing to eliminate the errors, the scanning errors that usually occur? And I'm thinking now of a lot of different kinds of subject matter that's even considered unscannable. I was just kind of curious how you guys are muddling through that.
Right. So Robert might want to take that one. The lab mic. Basically, we're getting OCR text. It's not being corrected. Sometimes it's replaced when better OCR comes along. It's too many.
Yeah, the format is called GREN, which is a format that Google developed. And so folks who've actually put their own scanned items in are following that kind of format. But basically, it's a multi-item package that has, you know, the scanned master file image at a certain level, and then possibly OCR that came from the library that scanned it. So those would vary in the level of correction and analysis that went on when they created it. The Google piece used a completely automated process, and that was the whole point. And they got better and better at it as that whole thing went on, because they created better and better tools for doing it in terms of correcting for the angle of the scan, correcting for the OCR, and enhancing OCR over time.
One of the things that we think the Research Center can support, though, is more highly curated subsets where people are interested in spending some time cleaning up certain subsets of text. And then, of course, we'd like to make that known to other people who might want to work with those things.
I'll just add, as you think about the metadata, especially for materials, books that are hundreds and hundreds of years old, the catalog records for those books that you will see in your own institution's online catalogs are probably pretty short. There's probably not very much information in them. And those materials, as they've gone into the HathiTrust digital library, have those very succinct catalog records. So some of the research that is being proposed is to really help enhance some of those, because it is not a corpus where people are going in on a daily basis and augmenting or adding information to those records in order to kind of keep it in sync so that it isn't constantly changing. So I think that's your comment is something that, you know, most people would think, well, yeah, you just want to keep augmenting that. But I think augmenting that and keeping it in sync as one constant copy is also a challenge.
We had a question that came in on Twitter from Heather McCullough. And the question was about researchers that wish to use content to develop visualization tools with the corpus. And one thing I was going to point out is we've already done some visualization components that we use some high-performance resources to do that with for not this year's but last year's UNCAMP. And we did that with some XSEED resources and from that they were able to give us through an allocation, as well as through some resources at IU from a machine called Quarry. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that's open. Of course, that's one of the things that we see as the future. John, may want to talk a little more about that component.
About visualization?
Visualization and using, I guess, other people's tools within the corpus. So the big piece there would be, you know, it'd have to be available. And Heather's in the audience, so she may want to follow up, which is great.
She'll need.
That's great.
So the question was, computer science researchers interested in large data sets for research purposes, could they get those through the research center and use them to create their own tools? Is that correct? Okay. Depending on what they need and what they want to do with it, at this point in history, they might either go to the HathiTrust or to the research center. If they wanted, if they didn't really care what was in the data set, but they just wanted a lot, then the easiest thing to work with would be what we call the public domain, which is the public domain material scanned by the libraries, not by Google, the least restrictive collection. And they could request that from the HathiTrust and get that data set and drag it off to their cave and do whatever it is that they want to do. If they're particular about the content, the likelihood is that they'll end up working with us, with the research center, and that we won't be shipping them data, we'll be providing them computational access to the data. Does that answer the question? Yes.
Sorry. Okay. I know many of us who are in the world of working with individuals who have print-related disabilities are very excited about what is going on with the HathiTrust. And my question is, if you had a student who was blind or visually impaired who wanted to have access to these materials, would they have to go through one of the Hathi member libraries, or how would they actually then be able to have that access?
Robert, do you want to... Or Beth?
Beth may know more about that than I do, but.
I think each campus should have a process by which they make books and resources available to both students and faculty and staff who may be print disabled or have other types of access issues. If a student self-identifies, there is a way in which libraries can request that they get access to materials in the HathiTrust in a format that they can use. And I know this was something that we worked on a couple of years ago with Michigan and several other institutions. But I know this really comes down to the student self-identifying, and usually, you know, there is an office on each campus where students will say, you know, I need this book, but I need it in a particular format, and then they will work with the library to get it. And similarly, the HathiTrust will work through the library to provide access to the materials.
And I think Hathi is interested whether or not that library is a member, is that an institution that's a member of the HathiTrust. This is something they do see as part of their mission. With respect to the copyrighted material, that's still sort of in a beta process. It's a little bit ahead of our process of working with copyrighted material, but it's also not a plug and play, and I don't think we'll ever be a just in case process. I think if there's a specific student who needs a specific work and it's in copyright, I think you will be able to work with HathiTrust to get that. Today, if you walked in the door and asked for that particular kind of material, it would probably take you longer to get it than if what you wanted was public domain.
Yeah, there's a working group that we could put you in touch with on that there, and they are working on that beyond member types of services for that component, but it's a whole other set of people, so.
Any questions online?
I've got a question for you guys. Did this go up? Hello?
Testing. Yeah, there we go. So I got a question for you guys. So you kind of saw what we were being able to offer, at least in our prototype so far today, a little bit about, you know, the access, what we were able to do with the APIs. Do you, at your institution, do you currently work with researchers who would want to use those resources or services right now? Maybe just show our hands. Oh, great, great.
Okay.
And had you heard about our UNCAMPs before? We've had two now. The first one was in Indiana a year ago, and the second one was at University of Illinois' iHotel back in September. And first one we had about 100, second one we had about 150 people. It, by breaking it down, the larger percentage at each were librarians, but we also had lots of researchers. We also had lots of research computing types that do some sort of analytics on textual files.
The format's a mixture of presentations and hands-on work with the tools. We will be doing it in the fall next year again. Can't say where yet, don't know.
I just want to add a point about the question about accessibility and accessible collections. There is a, if you go to the HathiTrust.org site, there is a page that talks about accessibility. The more specific services are services that are available to the HathiTrust member institutions. So that's, you know, one of the benefits of membership. It's not a freely available service, but I would encourage you to just take a look at the HathiTrust.org site. Because there's really lots of good information about not just access to the public domain corpus, but there's a lot of good information about the services that are provided by the HathiTrust.
All right. Last question.
I didn't see anyone else asking, and I had just one quick comment and one question on that is, I'm from the University of California, Berkeley, and we recently signed the agreement with HathiTrust, and we're just super excited about all of it. One of the things is when we get a electronic text for a student with a print disability, you know, we have to delete it from, you know, our thing. And the only concern that we've got around that is that we are going to be spending a lot of time to clean up that document in terms of editing it and making sure it's right. So I was happy to hear you say it sounds like we could send our edited version to the HathiTrust even though we're deleting it from our original, because we don't want to go up to all that effort and then just
Actually I think you might do better at this point sending it to us,
okay,
to the research center, because really, as Beth was suggesting before, it's still a research problem to figure out how this stuff goes back up to HathiTrust if HathiTrust is periodically getting all its scans refreshed by Google.
Yeah.
And how do we keep those things from stepping on each other? Okay. So
yeah, that's excellent. So my other sort of plea and really interest, the research that you're describing is just phenomenal, and it actually takes a completely different thought process of the kind of research projects you can now do.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping you'll sort of have your folks be putting out their almost ideas that will kind of wet the pump to get people even thinking along a new line of the kind of research that they can now do with the tools that you're giving them, because I could see it would take a while for researchers to maybe, you know.
Yeah, well, and I think that's one of the great things about these UNCAMPs is there's nothing that really does that better than hearing somebody who's doing one of these projects talk about what they're doing, and people, you know, resonate with example. So, all right. Well, it is 4:31, and this session ended a minute ago, so thank you very much.